Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to U.S. National Elections. We are We the People News and Commentary. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Welcome to the show. We will be interviewing candidates from around the country for the 2021 elections and the 2022 elections this year and, of course, in 2022 leading up to the congressional elections. Today, I am honored, proud, and blessed to have in the studio Colonel Julie Hall, who is a veteran patriot, proud mother, who understands we are not concerned with parties or labels, but our shared dreams and values. Colonel Hall cares deeply about the people, and not only serving in the military and the medical arena, she has a lot of compassion. These are the type of people that we need in office today. We need truth seekers, truth speakers, and people that care about people, not about politics, not about special interests, not about money. And these are the types of people that I look for to have on my show that I believe will represent everyone. I am honored, proud, and blessed to welcome into the studio and join me, my friend Colonel Julie Hall. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Chauncey, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing well. I'm excited that you're on the show today. I'm excited to hear about some of the issues you're going to talk about today because the American people need to hear what you have to say. And I also want to say thank you for your service to our country, and thank you for wanting to stand up again, not only for the people of Massachusetts, but for the American people, for me, for my family. That is very, very noble, and I think people really need to look at when people want to serve their passion for people, and you exemplify a passion for people, doing what's right, not what's popular, and doing what's morally correct. So I want to say thank you again for your service.
How do I follow all of that? Hopefully I live up to all of that. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. I do appreciate those kind words.
You're so welcome. Talk a little bit about yourself. You're a candidate right now running for Congress. You're a retired colonel, and you're running for Congress in Massachusetts District 4. Talk a little bit about, we know you're a retired, what branch of the service did you serve in again?
I served in the Air Force.
Okay, so retired colonel in the Air Force. If you can, just talk briefly about, you have humble beginnings with you and your family.
Sure.
We've spoken before on another show. Talk a little bit about who you are as a person, your humble beginnings, and if you can, accelerate to after you're retired within 10 minutes as far as, then we can try to get into
right.
You being a candidate. If I, you know, I know I'm asking for a lot, Julie. So
we're going to do it this time. We're going to do it. So.
For any of my other listeners that are listening today who hasn't listened to a show that Julie and I did last week, it lasted for over an hour. And then if I can sidebar with Julie for a second. And then after the show, Julie and I spoke for another 2.5 hours. So I think that the point I was trying to make is that once we get going, we have a very informative and passionate conversation. So go ahead, Julie.
Well, thank you, and I do appreciate it. So, you know, like I'm going to first start off, my main reason for running was, of course, because I'm in the military, and I started seeing people disrespect the American flag. The American flag means a lot to me and a lot to people in the military. I was a commander twice of troops. I do want to mention, though, I did start at the very bottom of the enlisted rank. I had what they call, you know, we get stripes and we get these things that we put on our shoulders, but I had nothing. So I started at the very, very bottom. I came from a large family and a very middle-class, working-class family, and for the females in the family in particular, we were not the ones that were going to have the priority to go to college. It was still back in the day, and, of course, my brothers were going to be the ones that the money was going to funnel into. However, I was very, extremely, the best way I can put it, assertive in getting out there into the workforce. I understood what it was to stretch a dollar. I saw my parents do that, and I wanted to contribute, and I wanted to make sure from the very beginning that I was able to take care of myself. I thought that was very important for a female to be able to do that, to not be holding. So, you know, if you look at all of that, where I came from, the middle class, I used babysitting money to pay my way to college, believe it or not. I had an associate's degree, and after that, I said, I cannot afford to basically continue in college, and I want to serve my country. So I went in the military, and it ended up being one of the best things I ever did in my life. Like I said, I started off in 1978 when there weren't many women at all, and I worked in a predominantly male career field because I was an executive of a hospital. But I started off at the bottom, 1978, and I retired in 2009 as a colonel. So never expecting to do any of that. I am very much driven, as you can tell. Says a lot about my personality, people say, is that I'm very driven. And my dad actually was impetus for a lot of what I did. You know, even though he was a very traditional father, didn't want my mother to work, but she had to work, and he was sort of the traditional man. He told me, don't ever let anybody tell me that I could do, that there was something I couldn't do. Don't ever let them tell me no, is basically what he said. I think he regretted that because of the many times that I told him no, I wasn't going to do something. Mm-hmm. But it was probably the best advice that he gave me, and I carried that through my military career. And every time I hit a roadblock, I jumped over it, I went around it, or I pushed through it. But I did get beyond it. I wouldn't have made colonel unless I had that kind of an attitude. So kind of puts it in a nutshell. The military has been very good. I was able to go on not only to get my bachelor's degree, but to get 2 master's degrees and an internship at Johns Hopkins, which is a wonderful, wonderful internship. Johns Hopkins is one of the premier hospitals in the United States, probably the world. And I had the good fortune of being chosen by the military to go and do an internship as a hospital administrator. So I have an awful lot of experience in healthcare. I also have a lot of experience in leading. You know, when you're in the military, you're not just doing your job. You also have to be a leader. There are 2 tracks, basically, you have to follow. And you have to do both of those well at the same time. So it's a little bit different than somebody who's, you know, out in the economy where you just kind of get to focus in on your job. I have to get trained in my job. I have to get more degrees in my job. I have to get annual training. Plus, on the leadership side, I have to continue to go through what they call professional military education tracks that continue on with every new grade that you get. So we are well-trained people.
Yes, you are well-trained, and you are definitely well-trained to be a congresswoman. And that is very, very important. Leadership, management, understanding people, understanding administrations. You've worked with throughout all of those type of areas, and those are very important dynamics to be a legislator. You know, as you're talking about your functions within the military, I'm a retired fire captain, and, you know, being a professional firefighter is paramilitary, and those same types of drills, functions, and continual training takes place as well. So I definitely concur and understand, you know, what you've gone through to prepare you for representing, you know, all of the people. Talk about some of the issues. Talk about, if you will, some of the issues that are facing your district in Massachusetts currently that your constituents are talking about, or besides COVID or part of that, have been affected by.
Sure. It's one thing people need to know about Massachusetts. It is a very progressive state. It changed I have to tell you, from when I left and in the 1970s and when I came back in 2009, there were very few Republicans in the in our local and at our, you know, Beacon Hill, at our state level. Right now we have only three Republican senators in the entire state house representing us, and then another handful of representatives for the state. All of the people, all of the congressional legislators, are Democrats and fair-leaf Democrats. And that has been that way for quite some time, decades, from what I understand. In this particular district that I'm in, there is a lot of things going on. And I'm going to focus in on this because it was just recently we're going through redistricting, as most all states are doing right now, now that the census numbers came. But they came late, which is going to be a problem. So each state, and ours in particular, is looking at what kind of redistricting. I was really enlightened to hear that there were several people that spoke at the testimony. I didn't speak, I just listened. I do better when I sort of type up a document afterwards, so I'm going to send in a testimony about how I feel. But a lot of people did express just the same concerns that I had when I ran for office, which was the way it has been gerrymandered. I'm going to use that word because it's very true and I can back that up. It's been gerrymandered so that the most affluent cities and towns in our district are also the most heavily saturated with Democrats. The last three elections, person who won came from the exact same town, which is so far north. It is the bordering the most extreme part of our district in the north and closer to, say, Brookline and Boston in that area. So I was very enlightened to hear that people down in this district were saying the same things, is that they did not feel that they were being represented. They did not feel the working class was being represented or the middle class. That seems to be a current theme that goes on here in New England, and in particular here in Massachusetts, that the working class, we have a pretty large middle class, but we have very old money too. There's sort of a mixture of both of those. In terms of politics that are going on right now, the things that we're talking about is, of course, our legislatures are praising the fact that they're able, trying to push in a bill, which is universal mail-in voting. So you see a lot of you see a lot of states that are trying to get voter ID. You see a lot of states that are making reforms. Well, they were praising themselves that they were able to get a bill through, or getting close to get a bill through, before any of these quote-unquote reforms like these other states have been doing. I'm thinking, so there you have it. That's the kind of attitude that we have here. All that we have asked for as Republicans in the state of Massachusetts is a fair election process. We wanted what everybody else wanted. We wanted a review of the election process. We did not want mail-in voting. We did not want universal mail-in voting. We did, what we did want is voter ID. And we're going to push for that to get on the ballot. But right now, it's going to be, you know, they're pretty much going to push everything they want. They're going to go do exactly what they did during COVID. It's going to be early voting. Yes.
If I may ask you, the things that you're talking about supporting, the Democrats would call you a racist.
Yeah. I mean, this is the interesting thing. I mean, words that there's always that fallback point that people push in your face just to get you off keel. Like, you know, I truly, it's like they don't know me. They don't know anything about my life. They don't know anything of how I've lived my life. And as a military commander in particular, I have worked with and led and worked side by side with people of all kinds of races, all races, religions, socioeconomic statuses, genders. You say it, we have them. We work together, we put on our uniform, and we march on and get a job done. We did not have those kind of hang-ups that I think people, and I think what you're hearing a lot about the military right now is very misleading, and I'd love to talk about that a little bit more. So I don't have those kind of hang-ups, and I have been evaluated You know, one of the things about the military that when you vote for somebody that was in the military as a congressperson, they have been, we're going to use the word, fire tested. So if you say, gee, I don't know how this person performed, well, you know what? The military goes through a scrutiny process. You should know that when somebody makes it to a certain point in their career, that person has been tested over and over again. You got a little bit higher probability that you're going to get somebody that knows what they're doing and also has some integrity. So I really want to emphasize that to people that are listening right now. I'm not saying everybody in the military, just like any organization, but the probability of getting someone with great integrity and an excellent work ethic and somebody that's very well qualified, educated, the military requires all of these things of us. So when you do vote for somebody that was has prior military experience, and I hope that you do because I think they make the best candidates. I'm biased. You'll be getting somebody very, very good.
Thank you so much. For those that are tuning in, you're listening to U.S. National Elections podcast show, We the People News. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We're honored and blessed to have in the studio congressional candidate, retired colonel from the Air Force, Julie Hall, who's running for Congress in the District 4 in the studio today. Thank you. So now let's talk about the military in the last, we have about another 8 minutes, so I have to let you know that because you know we can, we'll continue talking and the show have ended and we're still thinking we're on the show.
I know.
But so what are, I know you want to talk about some other points, and just to let my audience know, the colonel will be back on my show again because she has a ton of information that she wants to talk about, and we're going to have her on at least once a month because the military is a big issue right now. We're going to have the colonel come back on, and we're going to start taking apart issue by issue and having the colonel explain to the American people what is happening within the military ranks. So we're going to have those conversations in the future to raise a level of consciousness with the American people, not only about your election, but to help them understand how the military functions, the politics within the military, how the current administration is affecting military policy right now with the Pentagon. All these various issues are on the table right now. So we're going to definitely be happy and looking forward to having you back on and discuss those issues. However, and like I said, the last 5 or 7 minutes, I'll let you talk about the issue as it relates to the military. I don't know if you wanted to talk about identity or COVID, vaccinations, whatever you wanted to talk about, I'll let you wrap that up.
Well, you know what? I'll kind of twist those two things in together. So one of the things I'll talk about first is the immunization. I, in particular, and I get a lot of pushback when here, you know, in this progressive state, when people say, "Have you? Do you wear your mask? Are you vaccinated?" So forth and so on. My answer is, you know, I worked in a hospital for 30 years of my life. Every disease and germ could, that you could possibly think of was probably floating around in that hospital. We saw SARS. This is not the first time SARS has been in, and that's what, you know, things that people need to understand. This is not the first time that we have seen SARS. When I was, you know, back in the military, we also had SARS patients. That's what COVID is, in case anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about. That SARS is COVID. That's what it is. And when we come into the military, we basically blindly, if you would, we, no kidding, walk down a line, and on each side of you are people holding these little things that look like guns, and they're actually shooting immunizations into you. So from day one, you have no idea what they're shooting into your body. So a lot of military people, and this goes on throughout your career, by the way, malaria shots, anthrax. I mean, these are some serious things that are getting put into your body, if you think about it. So now you wonder, well, why do military people not want to take any more of these magical drugs? Because they're afraid. They don't know half of the things that they're already in their body. And, you know, they've been in a situation where they've been told you have to do this, you have to take these. I don't care. I don't think there's one person that I know that wanted to take the anthrax shots. they had to take them because in the area that we were going to, that was a trouble. Now, why do we take these things? Because when we go to foreign countries, we aren't immunized for some of the viruses and germs and some of the things that the animals in particular carry on them. And I am going to point that out. The majority of the viruses that I have seen have come from animals. The Hunter virus carried a little flea on it. And we had a person die, a young man die in Korea of hemorrhagic fever. Hemorrhagic fever, which is something we don't get here. And they also got that from a rat bite or something of the sort. So the majority of things that we get that I have seen viruses are passed from animals to humans. Now, that's not all of how we get it, but keep that in mind as these discussions go on about COVID and people try to tell you, you know, where this stuff came from. So that's one of the reasons why the military doesn't really want to take any more shots. I happen to look at my medical record from the military and went through my shot record. And to be honest with you, I could not identify the litany of shots that I had had. They just say, you know, you got to get them. So that's the reason why military people are very skeptical about doing this right now. And they're going to be forced to do it. It's like they are forced to take the flu shot. But again, a lot of these people do understand why they're taking the shots, and they know it's because they're going to a foreign country. They know they have to take malaria because they know it's going to protect them. Here, we're not sure right now, you know, what's going on, whether, you know, just wearing the mask is fine, whether it's your herd immunity. I mean, you get so many different pieces of information, and I think that's probably why the military people are saying, no, thank you. So I'm with them on that one. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is from the very beginning, we had we do have difficulties in particular. Like every society, and I think I spoke about this, the military is a microcosm, really, of what goes on in our society. And we tend to move through things a little bit quicker, mainly because we have to work together. So we have to deal with some of the issues and challenges that come up. One of the things in particular I talk about quite often is the fact that of me being female. There were not females when I went in, not many. They didn't stay. They got married. They met their husband there, and they went on with their life. I stayed. I wanted to have a career. I wanted to finish college, all of those things that kept me in. But it was very, very difficult being a female. When I came in, we couldn't go to war. Now, you might say, oh, that's a good thing. Well, it's not a good thing. Good thing, because when you do go to war, you get medals. Those medals and ribbons that you bring back with you go for what's called points. And those points go towards your pay. So you can see how this system is causing an unequal pay system. And that's something I really liked about the military, was the fact that I felt, hey, if I'm a sergeant, it doesn't matter whether I'm a female sergeant or a male sergeant, we get paid the same amount of money. That was a beautiful thing to me back in the 70s, because that did not happen with women. We did not have that kind of equality. So we have worked through that in the military. And why? Because the military wants to keep good people in. They don't really look at who that person's sleeping with, what religion that person is. They want good people to do their job. And because of that focus about having the best, we have opened up and broadened up the pool. If I'm going to choose people to come to battle with me or to help me do my job, I want the largest pool of people that I can get, because I know I'm going to get the best and the brightest. So the military learned on pretty quick that if you start restricting or isolating, if you're not an inclusive environment, you're going to restrict people that might have helped you win that war or save somebody's life. We learned that very, very quickly. I think that, again, is what drives me, even though I'm very much a conservative, when it comes to the human resources part. I obviously tend to be a little bit moderate, and I am very inclusive, and I'm very empathetic and very understanding, because I've seen all kinds of people step up to the plate and be heroes. They love this country. You know, we're talking about the transgenders and the difficulties now. That would take a whole show. From a medical standpoint, I've been doing a lot of research on that. But again, We knew there were transgender people in our military. We knew for years there were gay people in our military. When they came on, along with the don't ask, don't tell, we kind of had a funny saying, don't ask, don't tell. We don't care because we already know who they are. That was our full statement of that. That comes from the outside. That did not come from the inside. The politicians have a tendency to look at us and say, we need to make these changes, or we need to make these changes. Now, do people complain about these things? They do. But the way it works is the commander is the person who is supposed to take care of the troops. That is such an important responsibility and such an important cohesion. That's what makes the military work. So when these civilian Congress people get in and say, hey, I want to change the lawyers who look at rape. I want to change a policy on don't ask, don't tell. I want to make sure that transgenders have X, Y, and Z. Sometimes they're not helping, and they're only making things worse, and they're not allowing that commander to do their job correctly. Now, I spoke to you a little bit earlier about my qualifications. My qualifications are not different than any other, most other officers. Most officers in the military have 2 master's degrees minimum. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I've worked with doctors, so now they have doctors. But that is the level of the people that you're dealing with. If somebody wasn't taking care of the people properly, that person would not get promoted. I can guarantee you
Colonel,
that. They would not be in charge.
Colonel, thank you. Unfortunately, Colonel, we're out of time. And, you know, that is clearly the difference between you being a sitting congresswoman or the current armchair quarterbacks that talk about how they want to reform the military with no understanding. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Please, I'll give you 30 seconds if you can just share with my audience your website. If people want to call you, donate, volunteer, just share
please.
Your website and we can wrap it up. Thank you.
Oh, yes, please. It's hallforcongress.com. Now, again, they tell me that you don't have to use the www anymore. That's old school. So the website, if you put in Hall for Congress, hallforcongress.com, and all the information you need, there's a place where you can email me. Please, a donation would be lovely. To get a campaign started, it takes a lot of money. So if you're going to hear that all the time, I wish it wasn't that way, but it is, and I would greatly appreciate anything that you can donate. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Colonel, for coming on the show today and taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with us. You're listening to U.S. National Elections, We the People News. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Please follow us on Facebook at U.S. National Elections for updates on who's going to be on our show next. We're going to be hosting U.S. Senate, congressional, and also gubernatorial candidates from around the country. So please tune in. We want to thank everybody for tuning in today and listening to our show. Please, if you have a chance, please visit Julie Hall's website. Make a donation if you can. It is very difficult as a truth seeker and truth speaker to raise money. Julie, as you heard, is a compassionate person who wants to represent the people. She's not concerned with political interest groups, big corporations. She wants to serve you. So whatever you can do, please help her out. It'll make a dent. It'll make a difference so she can be a voice for all the people. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a good night. God bless you all. Remember, keep the faith.